The Canby Report was produced and recorded on the traditional and unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem peoples.
It's December 2nd, 2022, and there are 1,415 days until the Vancouver municipal elections. This is the Canby Report. I'm Matthew Naylor.
And I'm Ian Bushfield.
A very happy holiday season to you, Ian. Mariah Carey's dulcet tones are filling the airwaves, and everything is decked out in conifers and lights. What a time to be alive. So we have a hell of a show for everyone today. But first, as with every time, we have to remind you about our Patreon, which is patreon.com/CanbyReport.
Yes, patreon.com/CanbyReport. The other thing I wanted to mention today is we're on Spotify. Some people listen to podcasts on Spotify. I don't know why, but it gives us a Spotify Wrapped at the end of the year for the podcast. Ours is very embarrassing because everyone listens through normal apps. But if you want to make our Spotify Wrap 2023 less embarrassing, follow us on, you don't have to subscribe, but just, or listen to us through Spotify, but just follow us on Spotify so that it looks like we have more followers. And then you listen to us through Podcast Addict like a normal person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not a Spotify user. I use YouTube Music for my music. So mostly because I get most of my entertainment through YouTube, and so it gets rid of the ads and is a music service. So it seems like a good deal for me.
It's a good value. Also a good value, patreon.com/CanbyReport.
Yes. In the biggest news of the last couple of weeks, Doug McCallum, not guilty.
Sometimes a judge goes through a very annoying trial and just goes, fuck it, I don't ever want to hear about this again. I don't want to subject any higher level judges to appeals or anything. And they throw the whole course out. I'm not saying that's what happened here. I'm not going to impugn the motives of any members of our justice system. But what a verdict.
What a verdict indeed. So the judge, quotes, believed that the evidence indicated that the medical results said that Doug McCallum's foot could have been run over, and so he might have had his foot run over. The video evidence didn't indicate that he didn't have his foot run over, and apparently the fact that he went shopping for 2 hours after having said foot run over before calling for emergency services was neither here nor there. It's a very inconvenient bush in the video evidence. And as such, this bush that obscured Doug McCallum's tragically run over foot, now, at least so has been found by a court of law, well, it happened, I guess.
It's the shrub of reasonable doubt.
Yes, that is exactly what it is. So there it is, Doug McCallum not guilty of mischief or making a false report to police, even though definitely seems like that could be what happened, but it's definitely not rising to the standard of criminal conviction, which is what was required in this instance.
The remaining political question is who pays Mr. McCallum's bills. The city sure doesn't want to, but they might be on the hook now because it's hard for them to say he was just fucking around when the courts didn't agree.
Yeah, so stay tuned for more on that. The courts may be done with this story, but we certainly are not. This will be a little hot potato that Mayor Brenda Locke will have to deal with, along with the rest of her new Surrey Council. Now, from Doug McCallum's feet to a game played with feet. Perfect segue. Ken Sim was in Doha watching the World Cup.
This was an amazing series of tweets. Some of the first city council meetings happened where, like, Ken Sim was at the inaugural meeting, but then the first meeting after that where they actually brought forward many of the motions that ABC campaigned on, he wasn't there. He was tweeting about them, or someone was using his account to tweet about them. Ken Sim was tweeting selfies from Qatar, where he was at the World Cup. Dan Fumano also writes that he missed his first police board meeting. He so loved the police that he let them govern themselves, I guess.
Well, again, not that different from what Kennedy Stewart did, so...
The chair of the police board doesn't get much power, let's be fair.
They don't
get a vote, so... But yeah, I guess it's one of those things where, like, he probably bought tickets a long time ago, didn't know for sure if he'd win. He starts the new job, and he's like, well, I'm still going on my vacation that I'd booked already. That works maybe in business. It feels bad in politics, though.
It does feel bad in politics. Although, honestly, I don't... Whatever.
Yeah.
Just go on your vacation, I guess. Just know that it looks bad.
He doesn't have to face the voters for 3 years. Three and a half, four.
Four years. 4 full years. Very specifically, 1,415 days. As we will keep reminding you from now on into eternity.
But he did make it back for board meeting or for council meetings in the last week. And so we got to see him. He actually brought a Team Canada jersey and stuck it on the back of council chambers. So when the camera was on him, there was a Team Canada soccer jersey on the wall.
You boob.
There's far worse things. I don't think he cut the legs off the desk like he had told us he was going to in 2018. But we got into a fun debate over the budget in the city. And this is where Twitter kind of exploded.
Not in the, you know, just Twitter is exploding kind of news, but
no,
in the traditional Twitter exploded kind of news.
Yeah, Spencer Powell, who we've mentioned before, Bam Bam on Twitter. Spencer Powell is his real name. He was at war with Mike Klassen, I think, and he looks like a troll. He has a little rat at the end of his name tag. He puts Santa Claus in the middle, and his picture is from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So, fair enough. But he flagged that during the budget debate, Ken Sim suggested monetizing the libraries, which people didn't take kindly to.
What a bad idea. Like, libraries should be just a public good, a public resource for people. Libraries are very good at building resiliency in communities and are very useful not only for providing books to folks, but also for just providing community gathering spaces and building a sense of community in a urban environment. Creating user fees for such a service is a bad idea and will make them less accessible and, more importantly, less useful for building that community fabric.
I agree with everything you've said. I think it's fair to...
That's very gratifying. Thank you.
...the mayor to put his full question into the podcast here. We'll cut to that.
Work you do, and I think we can all acknowledge that libraries are super important, not only to, you know, help our future generations, you know, create leaders in our society, but also all the incredible work you do when we have heat domes and what have you. My question to you is, have you looked at potential revenue opportunities in the Vancouver Public Library system that helps fund some of the great work that you want to do? And I'll give you an example. I had the honor of touring the Long Beach, California Library, and it's absolutely amazing. And they celebrate STEM, and they have 3D printers, and they have art shops there. And I was thinking, how many libraries do we have again? 17?
21 branches.
So if we created a situation where we could get minimal revenue from each one, like less than $500 a month, that would actually generate $100,000 in revenue that would, you know, fund the, you know, the training and de-escalation. And so we can still achieve, you know, all of our social goals and have it accessible to everyone. And with that small revenue opportunity, we can actually make them even better. Have you guys looked at that at all, or is there some resistance to do that?
So what you hear Ken Sim say is he loves libraries, just like you do, just like I do, and he does see them as a valuable part of the community. He then goes into this sidebar about needing to find additional revenue streams, and you know, he asks if there's, what is there, 17 libraries, and they correct them that there are 21 libraries in the city. And he says, well, even if you could just find some additional revenue, and he he mentioned this anecdote of LA where he'd been to a library and they have like 3D printers that I guess people pay to use, and says, you know, if each library could generate $500 a month, that's over $100,000 a year. That'll fund the social worker that you want to hire. And I think it was his way of saying, like, the charitable interpretation is he likes libraries. He's trying to encourage some out-of-the-box thinking. There are ways to support the programs and services that everyone wants in the city. The less charitable way is that he's a very savvy business person and isn't going to come up to council on his first day and be like, we will milk this for every dollar we can, because he knows that would be an unpopular statement.
So, like, as things go, I actually think it would be pretty cool to have publicly accessible 3D printers. Like, I have had stuff that I would like to 3D print, but I just don't really have access to one on a, like, particularly stable basis. And so, I, you know, not a bad idea. But if it comes down to the idea of, like libraries already charge for photocopying. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a service that exists.
They charge, and they have certain things they can charge for. The response the librarians give, and I say librarians, I mean the representatives of the library, is they are constricted by law to what they can charge for. They run some rentals. They, you know, have some small fees for things like that you mentioned, photocopying, late fees. Although I think Vancouver may have abandoned late fees in the last council, and they may still be gone. So
I believe so.
Their opportunities are restricted. I saw some people on Twitter going, well, why couldn't they put more restaurants in or rent more things out? And it's like, what frustrates me most about this whole conversation is we have a new mayor and realm of supporters who don't know how the system works. And I'm not saying they have to agree with the system, and they could bring new ideas and suggestions to it. But like, there's fundamental misunderstandings of what the library is and what it is even doing right now. Like, the libraries are generating revenue in a number of different ways. They are renting out rooms, but they can only do so much. And they generally operate as a service. So their room rental rates are generally more affordable than most places, because the library recognizes that there's a lot of small groups and nonprofits and individuals who want to rent out for the public good. And that's why the library is there.
Yeah, back before we had such a you know, hefty Patreon following, we often partook in the library's rooms.
Yeah, they have recording spaces that they lent out for free. These are good services.
In other budget news, more money for cops. Because.
Yeah, we mentioned the 100 cop, 100 nurse motion went to council. It passed, unsurprisingly. What was surprising is Lisa Dominato, after introducing her motion, immediately sought to amend it to increase the numbers from 6 million total to 16 million, because it turns out you can't hire that many people for nothing. So they are now putting 8 million towards cops and 8 million towards nurses. And the Vancouver police has also come back and said they need an additional $38.5 million in the next budget. So there's just money needs to come flying around, all totaling probably a 7% tax increase, unless the city can find a bunch of efficiencies, let's put it kindly.
Bullshit. Like, Vancouver is a well-run government. I don't think those efficiencies exist.
Well, and they slashed a lot during COVID. They had to.
Yeah. Like, we are an undertaxed city as things go. Like, our property taxes are remarkably low. I just wish that as we were correcting for this, it wasn't all going towards cops. I think that's my biggest pickle here.
Yeah, so that's coming forward. What I think maybe screwed around with ABC's thinking about the numbers is another misunderstanding from the mayor's office, where shortly after becoming premier, David Eby announced a big public safety plan with money for things like peer-assisted care teams. This is something a number of parties talked about in the election, and it's kind of... Mm-hmm. We're not entirely sure what the province is going to be rolling out, but in one city's vision, these are non-police-based intervention units. I think ABC is happy to include them as like the CAR 8788 program, like they're talking about. They just already counted $3 million as coming from the province to fund their 100 police, and they're like, see, the province supports us. They were forced to issue a retraction a couple weeks ago saying, we misunderstood. Oops.
Oh, dear. So, yes, that retraction was issued by Kareem Allam, who is the chief of staff for Ken Sim. They walked that back in a social media post. In other council news, the road tax is dead. Congestion pricing will not be coming to Vancouver's fair shores. May it rest in peace.
Yes, we talked about this on the last episode. Not a particularly controversial motion, especially with their majority. Wasn't expected to have much debate because it was dumb. No one was going to bring about congestion pricing, but now staff are verboten from looking at this. What I found funniest is that Christine Boyle and the two Greens just decided to abstain from the vote. Like, they know full well from last council that that's a vote in favor.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of in favor of this abstention because it doesn't fucking matter.
Fine, but also they were basically on the record against this tax anyway. Like, the only people who have spoken out in favor of this tax are you and me.
Yeah, random people on Twitter, nerds.
Yeah.
So, don't worry, you're not going to have to pay your congestion tax, people. You also aren't allowed to be anti-Semitic anymore in the city of Vancouver. They have a new definition.
Yes, so the International Holocaust Remembrance Association definition of anti-Semitism has been adopted by council. Why this has to happen is not entirely clear to me, but it is happening, and we have done it. So the motion passed with Councillor Boyle opposed and Pete Fry and Adrian Carr abstaining. That is how things shake out. So, like, why do you think this was important or not important as things go?
I know it's been a political fight at a number of levels, especially members, people on the left and BC Civil Liberties Association have criticized the examples given with the definition as worryingly restricting criticism of Israel. It's weird, as you note, that a municipality is adopting this definition. There's like been political push to adopt this, and it's weird because we don't adopt as a municipality definitions of like anti-Black racism and other things. So I think it's probably going to be a nothing burger in the end. What I find fascinating is the Greens' abstention here. And I'm wondering, like,
yeah,
how many votes are they going to be abstaining on? Because the no votes don't really matter for a while unless there's a huge crack that forms in ABC. So politically, they're just going to be playing around to try to figure out where they want to sit for the next 4 years. And I guess abstentions, which support the motion, but don't know, whatever Hardwick used to justify it.
They know what these mean. So I don't know. It's going to be a very different council dynamic for them for a little while. And so I suppose I can give them some slack in terms of waiting for them to figure out like where this is all going to shake out. But like they've got to figure out a better way to like just vote in favor or oppose. Like, you're there to take votes. You're there to take decisions. Go do it.
A few more decisions are coming up at council. I looked at the agenda for this coming Monday, December 6th. I found three motions that I think are worth talking about. Let's start with the first member motion that'll come up is from Christine Boyle of One City. It's the non-market housing rezone plan, the one that failed 7-3 in the last council. She wants to bring it back and has really pitched it as ABC said they were on board with this in that Women Transforming Cities survey, which we covered extensively on this podcast. Will they vote in favor this time of allowing mid-rise non-market housing everywhere in the city?
Yeah, good political positioning from Boyle on this one. ABC was effectively in favor of this, and they should support it if they are going to put their money where their mouth is. Like, we have said this a number of times, ABC's housing plan isn't terrible. They've just got to execute on it.
What housing plan?
I mean, to the extent that they had one, But
streamlining permits was their plan, which fine.
Yeah, but like they, okay, that's a fair, I think that's a little uncharitable.
No, I'm being mean, yeah.
But like, people have got to hold them to account and move forward on what is the number one issue for voters on this council during the last election. Housing was the most important. As things have, the results may belie that particular truth, but all the public opinion polling showed that housing was the most critical issue for voters. They have got to deliver on this somehow, and working with other parties and working with Councillor Boyle, who is going to be a key part of doing that.
Yeah, the votes in favor of it last time were Boyle, Stewart, and Jean Swanson. So the Greens voted against this, or at least voted to defer it, as well as Dominato Bly and Sarah Kirby-Young, who are back on council. And so let's hope this moves forward. The other housing item on the agenda comes from, I believe it's Sarah Kirby-Young, and it calls for transparency and a fixed rate in fees for low-rise and medium-density buildings in the city. So rather than this pay-as-you-go, negotiate every single rezoning, the city would just say, this is how much it costs to put in simpler projects.
Yeah, and I think that might be good. Like, it's not a bad idea. Community amenity contributions are effectively the way that a city, or this city, bargains with developers to produce a certain amount of community amenity projects in exchange for allowing a certain amount of market development. Every project has a certain amount of CAC things, making sure that they are consistent and fair. Like, I would be in favor of this, particularly if they were going to set the CAC on the high end, because there is actually value in knowing what it is before the project is, and then you can just build it in, rather than having this nebulous cost of the negotiation, like, increase the cost of the project overall.
Yeah, and it simplifies things, right? Especially for projects that aren't particularly complex. I get the challenges posed by a 45-story tower or any of the larger buildings that we're looking at in some cases.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine.
That is different.
But if you're talking about putting in a 4-story apartment rental building, let's make it simpler. Let's allow those to be built. But like you say, still manage to make sure that there is some public benefit financially for that, so that they can build the things that it's necessary to make it a nice city to live in. So I like this. This is a good, smart thing that, you know, there's only so much I expect to see on housing from ABC, and this is on the better end of it, I think, in terms of making it a more housing-friendly city.
In other cops news, a police body cam motion is coming forward. This motion would direct staff to study the issue of body cams and report back. This motion was introduced by ABC Councillor Lenny Zhu, and basically it doesn't create any funding, and it doesn't speak to the funding for such a thing, but it will direct staff to look at it.
Yeah, City Council can't make police body cams happen. It's in the police jurisdiction. It's in the police board jurisdiction. There's provincial legislation that governs how it gets set up. So this is basically just City Council endorsing the concept and, like you say, studying it a bit more and trying to figure out how to fund it. There's estimates this will cost $15-20 million a year. That might just be an initial setup cost to buy some of the stuff, and then there'd be an ongoing...
Yeah, that sounds a little more like an initial setup cost, but...
There will be that price tag associated with it initially.
And another couple million, you know, it's a...
It's not one of those things that I'm, like, 100% opposed to, but structurally, it doesn't really change anything, and you really have to make sure that that cops don't control all the cameras themselves, because what we've seen in the States in particular is a lot of times these cameras turn off or just stop working at very critical points in time. So they can help. They're not the worst thing out there, but I don't think it solves any fundamental issues that people have with policing.
Yes. In city contracts news, Vandu has lost its street cleaning contract.
Yeah, I didn't realize they had this. I don't know that many people did. They had been awarded $320,000 from the city under the block stewardship contract. And this was a program that basically said, rather than having police and city staff come through the downtown east side and do street sweeping and cleaning, we'll work with community groups to have them set up programs involving community members to do the cleanups, which sounds great to me, honestly. It sounds like the perfect way to try to engage people in their local community. Vandu was awarded this. They were paying local residents up to $20 an hour to sweep the blocks, but there was some accusation from city that they had not been fully putting this money towards cleaning. A lot of it had undoubtedly gone towards building up Vandu as an organization, because to oversee people you need capacity,
operational capacity. Yeah,
overhead, that's normal. I work in nonprofit. Overhead is a necessary evil, or my job in many ways. But the city has cut it off and said they're going to transition them out. It generated a lot of controversy on social media and Reddit and other places where people really don't see the value of this in many ways. The critique of it was that the people working with Vandu weren't necessarily always doing cleaning, but sometimes were learning valuable skills in terms of organizing and working in community and other things.
Honestly, I'm kind of indifferent. Like, Vandu is a useful organization, but I can't say that Hastings Street has been a rousing success.
There was also something weird in here I didn't totally understand, that the funding wasn't put from engineering services, but who were generally in charge of street cleaning. The street cleaning budget alone is tens of millions of dollars in the city, so this is pennies we're talking about. But it lived in a different house within the city. And it was never clear why the money came from the arts, culture, and community services rather than engineering, if the goal of it was street cleaning.
I find it annoying that the street cleaning budget has to be so high, but I was walking down the street yesterday and I had to give this guy like the worst stink I've ever given someone in public, because he just like unpacked his McDonald's and just threw shit all over the ground. Like, some people, anyway.
Don't litter. Podcast.
Don't litter. Anyway, that's not all street cleaning is, but like, still, what an asshole.
One street that'll be easier to clean will be the pathway through Stanley Park, as they're getting rid of that accursed bike lane, Matthew.
I just want to say how much this is going to suck for drivers. Because they're going to be stuck behind bikes. Like, they are. They are 100% going to be stuck behind bikes going up the hill, and that will be dumb.
No, it's going to be two lanes now. So, a motion's coming to Park Board.
Is it going to be two lanes one direction, or is it going to be two lanes opposite directions? Because if it's two lanes opposite directions, which is what I understood it to be, people are going to get stuck behind bikes.
Well, they were already stuck behind horses.
Well, they're still going to get stuck behind horses.
Horses and bikes.
Like, it's one lane. It's still one lane. I suppose they could cut around into the other lane, but, like, still.
ABC is claiming that they may bring back the bike lane at some point while trying to preserve the two lanes, whether they go the same way or opposite directions. But it's unclear how that would ever work without cutting down a lot of trees.
So. Yep.
Anyway, go yell at the park board if you like the Stanley Park bike lane.
In other boards news, Surrey has had a hell of a first police board meeting with the inaugural meeting for Mayor Brenda Locke, who hates the police.
She hates the Surrey police service.
She hates the Surrey police service.
Board member Cheney Cloak was at this meeting and asked, Chair Locke, you publicly state that you are against SPS and the transition and the work of this board. May I ask how you plan to fulfill your duties as chair, recognizing you have signed an oath stating you will be honest and impartial to perform your duties as chair? To which Brenda Locke said, fair question.
She continued, I think the act understands that there will be tension, and I do understand my own responsibility to declare conflict when I believe my conflict is in that place.
Cloak disagreed with that and asked that her disagreement be recorded in the minutes of the meeting. Fun times.
Now, I will say, I think Brenda Locke is on pretty solid footing here because there is no conflict of interest. Like, conflict of interest, as the Michael Weeb saga shows, has a very specific fucking meaning. And most of the time, the things like running with your wife, not a public, not a conflict of interest. Having an opinion contrary to the existence of the organization that you are serving on the board of, not a conflict of interest. It's only when there is a pecuniary interest in favor that there is an issue.
If Brenda Locke was a cop, was an RCMP officer, might be a different situation. She just doesn't like the SPS. But by her role as mayor of Surrey, she has to sit on that board. So there she is. We all have to do things we don't like to. Nevertheless, Surrey is pushing forward with trying to get rid of the police. They've had two motions now and an interim report from city staff on the transition. We don't know how much any of this will cost yet. They need to figure that out in the next, I think, 2 weeks, possibly three, and get all of that to Mike Farnworth before Christmas.
Again, ambitious.
RCMP also need to say how they're going to hire people as RCMP are trying to fill staff across the province with the new money that David Eby just gave them. So lots of very difficult, unanswered questions remain for stopping this transition process. And there's an increasing chance that this whole thing falls apart and Brenda Locke is stuck with the Surrey Police as of January.
At Metrovan level, Brad West has been acclaimed as head of the Mayor's Council. This is the body that governs TransLink. And congratulations, Brad West, on yet another successful acclamation.
This is notable as Jonathan Cote was the past chair of it, and he really drove an urbanist agenda on expanding TransLink. And so it's interesting to see a more suburban mayor take the helm. Port Coquitlam doesn't have SkyTrain, though Brad West would love it to extend off the spur from Coquitlam Center. It'll be interesting, I think, to see, because TransLink has a united vision right now with Transport 2050, and there's a lot that could be done here. And so it shouldn't be a controversial position, and hopefully he doesn't fuck it up.
Nope. Moving over to Metrovan, George Harvey has won the race to chair the Metrovan board. George Harvey is the mayor of Delta, and he beat the current chair of the Metrovan board, Sav Dhaliwal, and also Linda Buchanan from the city of North Van, in their attempts to either retain that seat or to get it. Petered out kind of there.
That's all right. This is somewhat of an interesting, very inside baseball kind of race, because George Harvey's more on the center-right, fiscally conservative side versus Dhaliwal and Buchanan are more on that like progressive urbanist side. Not to say Harvey is against development in any way, but just fiscally, where do their minds sit? The Metrovan board will be responsible for, you know, a lot of fees that could get passed on to homeowners and property taxes. I know Harvey is very eager to keep property tax increases low. And so between that and what we're seeing in Vancouver, a real tightening of the belts might be happening across the region for property tax increases in many ways.
In other related news, Lisa Dominato, who was the current vice chair of the Metrovan board, has lost her bid to continue in that position to Village of Anmore Mayor John McEwen.
To be fair, McEwen probably has more time.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it also goes to show that, like, not everyone's super enamored with Vancouver right now. So they have chosen the, frankly, opposite of Vancouver. Out on the UBC Peninsula, 24,000 more homes are being built with their Housing Expansion 2050 program.
They want to do a major redevelopment of the Acadia developments that are there. They're looking at two options to help fill in a lot of this. One would be 30-story towers, or even taller than 30 stories, which would allow for more park space and generally be more livable versus a low-rise and mid-rise, which I guess would eat up some of that park space, because you can't, I have learned, fit the same number of people on the same footprint if you shrink the buildings.
What? What? Ian, I have been lied to. I have been told by Patrick Condon that you can have the same number of spaces in low-rise apartments as in high-rises and still keep park space. What are you talking about?
Well, it also turns out when you do all your renderings with orange buildings, they don't make the shadows as ominous, so that helps too.
So big developments out there. There is also an examination of a possible park and ride plaza, I'm going to say, for Coquitlam by TransLink.
Yeah, TransLink was given the power to build homes several months ago by the province, allowed to, and use the development levies and money they make off of that to fund transit expansion. And they haven't done anything yet with it, but they have the power within, I think it's 800 meters of any transit center. Right now, they're looking at the giant parking lot that is beside Coquitlam Center and saying, we could just plop a whole bunch of towers there at the corner of Lougheed and Barnett. There's already a different development going in across the street from that at an old car dealership. And this is all part of the Coquitlam Center development area. So this would be really promising because it is a ugly waste of space, this giant parking lot, and I would love to see more towers in there. Locals in my community are already mad that there might be more traffic, which is just a fundamental misunderstanding of why you would put towers above a train station.
Yeah, wait, what? No, no. Moving along. The Broadway subway has been delayed to 2026.
No surprise here. This is a very big project. It will take a little bit longer than 2025 to get to Arbutus. Hopefully, though, we can eventually find some money to get it all the way to UBC for those 24,000 more homes that they're putting in.
Yeah, like, holy shit, eventually, they're kind of an imperative at this point. Finally, territorial acknowledgements.
Yeah, some interesting news around the region. West Vancouver, under their new mayor, Mark Sager, has decided to stop saying them verbally in meetings, but they're leaving them on the printed agenda. This led to denouncements from Squamish representative and chairperson Hasalem and friend of the podcast, as well as the Tsleil-Waututh Nation has also condemned it, both noting that, like, territorial acknowledgements aren't the end of reconciliation, but if you stop doing them without asking, it's not good for reconciliation.
Nah, it's kind of the bare minimum, the kind of the first step gesture of good faith.
And as another gesture of good faith, Richmond City Council has finally voted unanimously to start looking at doing more around truth and reconciliation, possibly including land acknowledgements there. Mayor Malcolm Brody has generally wanted to not do them in the city, as he doesn't want to intervene in the disputes between the Cowichan First Nation and the Musqueam First Nation over some of the land in the city. And there's a lawsuit against the city, and he thinks saying some magic words would bias the city one way or the other, which is not.
It absolutely would not. No, it would not do that. We end every episode of the Cambie Report with a little tidbit from Vancouver's history. And seeing as how I have been in the city for so many years now, I'm actually going to share with you something from my second year in Vancouver, the 2006 storms. Now, these were some of the most destructive and significant storms to hit the Lower Mainland. Definitely, I don't think any storm since has been as destructive.
The rains, well, within the city of Vancouver.
Yeah, within the city of Vancouver, I mean, for sure. The
last year was bad.
Last year, not great, yeah. But the 2006 storms, which included the hilariously named Hanukkah Eve windstorm, were a series of storms that were the remnants of Typhoon Cimarron, and they began on November 5th and continued on November 15th. They caused landslides into Vancouver's three main reservoirs. This led to the water system becoming contaminated far beyond the legal safety limit and forced the city to implement a boil water advisory for all of Metro Vancouver's 2 million residents for more than a week, the largest such advisory in Canadian history. This also affected the local food industry, forcing supermarkets and restaurants to stop selling produce which couldn't be safely washed, causing many of the city's coffee shops to close. No dangerous bacteria levels were observed, but the water was still considered unclean and unsafe to drink, wash vegetables, or brush teeth without boiling it for at least 1 minute. Bottled water was in high demand and became scarce in many areas, and this whole system was caused by an illusion low steering current to load low pressure areas from the central subtropics of the North Pacific Ocean to track northeast and near areas of British Columbia, sometimes bringing more than 4 inches of rain for each low. This was followed 3 weeks later on December 14th by the Hanukkah Eve windstorm, breaking and uprooting about 10,000 trees in Stanley Park next to downtown Vancouver. At its peak, BC Hydro reported that over 250,000 customers were without power and one couple asphyxiated in Burnaby due to carbon monoxide poisoning.
Thankfully, the storms this year haven't been anywhere near as bad.
And we can...
A little bit of snow shutting down the city. Just let it happen.
This is, of course, noting that there is a snowfall advisory for Metro Vancouver tonight, saying that we could get up to 10 inches.
Just which... bury everyone.
Yep. So good luck, everyone. Have a great holiday season. We will be back probably one more time before the holidays. And if not, see you in the new year. Bye.
Happy holidays.
Lost what show we were on for a moment there in my mind.